Blog Talk Radio.
The Fox, Angola Free Warrior, passes. Who has not heard of the Angola Three? Three young black prisoners who were falsely accused of killing a prisoner in 1972 in the infamous Louisiana maximum security prison, sited at a former slave plantation and named for the place where the African captives came from, Angola. On Thursday, August 4th, attorneys for Albert Woodfox announced his passing at the age of 75. For over 43 years, Woodfox and several other black men were held in brutal solitary confinement, one of the longest held solitary prisoners on earth. 43 years, 7 days a week, 23 hours a day. The United Nations Special Rapporteur on Torture has stated that any time above 13 days constitutes torture and a violation of international law. 13 days. 43 years. How did Woodfox survive? He cites the teachings of the Black Panther Party, books by Frantz Fanon, Malcolm X, and Marcus Garvey, and lastly, the daily work they did for decades of calling down the tear to quiz guys on black history, on math, and spelling bees. In an interview in The Guardian, Woodfox said, "Our cells were meant to be death chambers, but we turned them into school, into debate halls. By keeping their minds alive, they kept the beasts of madness at bay." After a bitter court fight, Woodfox was freed in 2016. And he returned to the remnants of his family. His daughter Brenda and her children and grandchildren greeted his return. He wrote a book entitled Solitary and spoke at colleges around the world about his time in Angola. In his last 6 years of freedom, he thought more and more of his mother, Ruby Mabel Hamry, who died while he was in Angola. He called her his true hero. She was, he said, functionally illiterate. But he added, "I never saw a look of defeat in her face, no matter how hard things got. I grew into my mother's wisdom. I carry it with me." Albert Woodfox returns to his ancestors. In love, not fear. This is Mumia Abu-Jamal. These commentaries are recorded by Prison Radio.
And greetings. Welcome to another segment of New Day, Resurrection and Liberation. My name is Empress tea, also known as Dr. Filet, and it is always wonderful to be with you live and in living color. All right, starting us off tonight, as I'm sure you are aware, none other than Mumia Abdul-Jamal. That was his latest commentary, and of course he was talking about Albert Woodfox, who of course made transition about a week or so ago. And again, this is also Black August, commemorating, of course, the issues, the kinds of concerns that is generated around the so-called prison law enforcement, prison industrialized complex, and what's called, of course, modern day plantations. So, of course, tonight we're going to talk more about Black August. Of course, always freeing our political prisoners is a conversation that we do on a regular basis. And certainly there are many actions that many take to lend to those efforts. Of course, again, that was Mumia Abdul-Jamal. And, of course, that is one of our political prisoners that we continuously work diligently to free. Also, there's, of course, Iman Jamil Al-Amin and, of course, Dr. Matulu Shakur, Reverend Joy Powell. And we're going to give you some other names as we proceed later on into the tonight's program. Again, Black August. And I want to thank Brother Kalanji for joining us last week to give us some history and insight into what Black August really is and represents. You know, one of the things that we've realized over the past decade or so, family, is that unfortunately we have too many people playing with our struggle, with our movement, misrepresenting, and in some instances, really working to tear it down, tear us down. Those, again, who are working to do the kinds of things that need to be done today. And needless to say, not just people, but groups, organizations, movements. So with that said, tonight we are going to talk to Chairman Yasser Tilley. Those who are not familiar with what recently happened with the Uhuru movement, of course, COINTELPRO, and certainly there are some other names for it today, I'm sure, but we are very familiar with the name COINTELPRO, because when we talk about political prisoners, then, of course, certainly that is one of the instruments, one of the tools that this government utilizes to make certain that our people were to be suppressed and in some murdered, set up, and so forth. And so, again, tonight we're going to talk about COINTELPRO. We're going to talk about what's going on today. Also, what are real movements and real work that is in our midst today to really bring about irreversible justice and liberation? So, family, get ready. We're going to have some serious, serious dialogue tonight, and certainly I'm hoping our brother from ASAC will be joining us because he wanted to share something about the campaign that he's been working on, and so hopefully we'll be able to talk about that tonight as well. But listen, before we do, I want to give a big shout-out to Brother Ray Ray and also Sister Keisha. I haven't been able to tune into to the latest Thorough Black Talk, but certainly you can go to YouTube and check it out. And, of course, there are also the Mackie Study Group. Had a wonderful, another wonderful session this past week. And again, you can go check them out, too, on YouTube. We're going to give you more information about them and others. Brother Mike, I think, put out maybe a week ago another edition of Community Cop. And, of course, Brother Lee is going to be joining us soon because they just came back from Colombia. Yes, you know, there was an inauguration there. And it was a sister that became vice president. Well, we're going to get a special report from Brother Lee and Brother Barbosi and just to give you some updates on that as well. Very, very powerful move. And again, it's important that we connect to what's going on the global level when it comes to the liberation of our people. Before we get ready to go to our line, family, we are going to remind you that September the 1st through the 4th, there's going to be, we've kind of switched up the schedule a little bit, but we are in fact going to hold our summit, our first summit. There's going to be a second summit for December, so we're going to put a lot of stuff into the December summit, but we decided that our people really need to have the capability and greater access to know what we're talking about. And when I say that, I'm referring to the We Charge Genocide 21 Project. The Boots on the Ground campaign will be going into full starting on September 1st. And that means we are really now strategizing to get information into our communities about what genocide is, what reparations is, what reparatory justice is. Again, we don't want to just have these conversations with one another. And so starting next month, we're going to make sure that flyers and information are in our local churches, in our local recreation centers, our schools, where we can have them at, particularly on the university campuses. We know we can get information circulated there. But also in some of our businesses, to make sure that flyers, brochures, and other kinds of informational materials are in locations where our people frequent, so that the information that we're talking about is more readily available, more readily accessible. Okay, and so again, starting on the first of September. Now, we're hoping that more folks will get involved with the We Charge Genocide 21. And we've kind of been a little disappointed in there not being the kind of response that we had hoped, but at the same time, not too surprised, given some of the things that we've seen over the past decade, but it's all good. At any rate, we're going to get ready to go to our live line. And again, family, what we want to do is bring to you a brother who is known in our communities and certainly one who has been supportive to MWM and our work and our movements. And we're going to talk to him about a campaign that he has launched and wants to share with folks. And we talk about Baba Emba is in the house, I do believe. So I'm going to check. I think I see him there. All right, let's do this real quick. And we're going to hear about Say It Loud and why some call themselves New Africans. So let's open up Baba Emba's mic and welcome him to this segment of New Day. Greetings, Baba. How are you this evening?
I'm fine, sister. How are you all?
Oh, wonderful, wonderful. Always good to be here and definitely always good to talk with you.
That's same here. So I appreciate you inviting me on to talk about this here New African and Proud initiative that
yes, sir.
You're pushing.
Mm-hmm. Well, tell us about it. What is it and why is it?
It's a program. Let me give you a little bit of history, really. Based on our history, when we were kidnapped and relocated to another land, when we were kidnapped from Africa and relocated to another land, we became New Africans at that point because we had been separated from the homeland, separated from all of those influences, separated from the culture. So we became New Africans at that point, more than 500 years ago. But we didn't know it, and we didn't think of it in those terms. We were a nation of people. And am I causing a distortion, Kathy?
I'm sorry, say it again.
Am I causing a distortion problem?
I think you're okay now.
Okay. So we were separated from our place of origin. And but even though we had been separated from our place of origin, we had maintained our history, our national identity, so to speak. But as I said, we didn't know this. So we came over here, where we were brought over here, forced to work, weren't taught anything about who we were. And we accepted labels that were placed on us that really did not have any legitimacy. Labels like Negro and color, Afro-American, African-American. We began to fight back, and as a result, we took on the label Black people, which is legitimate, and it was really a blow and a way that we were saying to white power, you know, screw you. You have made this term negative, but we're going to take this term you have made negative and turn it into a positive, which is what we did. That was a great expression on our part.
Yes.
But in the last 50 or so years, things have changed. So calling ourselves Black people doesn't really serve the purpose anymore. We have moved on. We have advanced in our struggle. And we are thinking more in terms of national identity as opposed to just the cultural identity that Black people imply, or the continental identity that African people imply. So we need to become more aggressive in making it known that we have a national identity and that we are New Africans. A lot of people who are conscious in the struggle, so to speak, neglect to make that point clear that we are a New African people, that we are not a satisfied segment of the white American nationality. So we, by taking on the Black, or by taking on the New African title, by using it more, we will be demonstrating not only that we consider ourselves separate from the United States of America, but also setting an example for other Blacks who are not so-called conscious to look towards us and to address what we are doing. As I was in the process of saying, many individuals in the vanguard of our struggle have neglected to make it clear who we are. We work with progressive and revolutionary groups and organizations, but without a national context. As a result, it's easier for others to see us as Black Panthers and still patriotic citizens of the U.S. of A., but not as individuals whose collective objective is to separate from the U.S. of A., to have a separate identity from that of the U.S. of A. And the same can be said when we see ourselves as Black Muslims, as revolutionaries, Black liberation, Black liberationists, Black socialists or revolutionary socialists. But we still do not forefront that we are New African people, that we represent a national identity that is separate from that of white America. So the purpose of the New African, the Say It Loud, New African and Proud campaign is to get us, those of us who are conscious and those of us who are not conscious, but particularly at this point, those of us who are conscious, we need to start using that to demonstrate to people that we are separate and apart from the national entity that is known as the United States of America. And that's essentially what the program is about. We have been contacting different media, the black media, as much as we can. And we're getting some positive responses. And I say we're getting positive responses, but based on what people tell us. But, you know, it's difficult to say because I have no way of measuring whether people are following through on what they're saying or not. But we are receiving some positive responses. We're receiving other responses from people in the mainstream, but it's mostly to determine if we're interested in paying them for ads or not. But our focus is to get people in the business or in the industry, DJs. We want them to mix that into their playlist. It's only a 5 second long spot, so to speak, and it will be easier to get mixed into different playlists. It can be easily presented as a public service announcement. It can be mentioned and played on talk shows. It can be programmed in by people who are programming radio shows and other types of shows. That is what we are trying to do, and we're trying to get people who receive this information through email or text or whatever to forward it to others. And I think that would be the main source of spreading this idea. People who get it from us, put it into their network, forward it to others, ask others to do the same, and the word will get around. When the term black became popular, it was because a lot of the mainstream people began to take interest in it, and particularly when someone like Jane Brown makes a song, it helps to get the word out. So
yes,
we have reached a stage in our development where saying we are black people doesn't serve the purpose that we need served anymore. We need to be more specific, more definitive in identifying who we are, what we are trying to do. And that is essentially the program. Just like any process, any political process or any other process, as it develops, it becomes necessary to do different things to accurately represent what the new developments reveal. So like it's a process that I've gone through personally, and it's a process that many groups and organizations have gone through. When I first started studying, I viewed slavery as an individual being removed and relocated and forced to work for free. But after I learned more and more, I realized that it was a nation of people who had been removed from their homeland and work somewhere else for free. So when I learn additional information, I have to put that into my studies and my teaching. I had to adjust my narrative by listening to Malcolm X explaining that the difference between civil rights and human rights.
When you use
those different terms, it gives an entirely different it makes an entirely different impact and gives people an entirely different sense of what the possibilities, what the resolution can be. So we need to begin referring to ourselves as New Africans and give that identity, give us that national identity that would, I guess, inject a more serious note, well, a clearer note of seriousness into what we are, into what we are trying to do as a group of people.
All
Our nation was created as soon as white people started kidnapping Africans and transporting us to different lands against our will. So we were transported all over. So my teaching is that there are new Africans all over, not just here in the United States. An example, in Haiti, they were new Africans. But they rebelled, established their own nation, and they called themselves Haitians. We are trying to establish our nation here, but whether we have reached the point we should have by this point or not is irrelevant. We still should be calling ourselves New Africans, and we should have been calling ourselves New Africans for 400 or 500 years. So I'm hoping people will be receptive to this change, and add an element to our struggle that will give us a lot more clarity and make a much bolder political statement than we make when we call ourselves Black people or when we call ourselves Africans, because the term African, it again, is a legitimate term, just like Black people, but it's not specific enough. So we need to be more specific and clearer in identifying who we are, particularly if we're in the vanguard of the Black Liberation Movement.
All right, all right. Okay, and so family, just to give you a little sidebar, so Baba Emba, of course, is an author and has been involved in liberation struggle movement for quite a while. How many decades, Baba?
Back to the 70s.
All right. So what you're hearing is not just a assumption or an opinion. It is based on critical work and analysis. Baba is a writer, author, certainly an active person. I started to say activist, but an active African, let's put it that way, in terms of the work that we talk about. And I said it because I've heard so many people talk about, well, this is what we should do, or this is what we need to do, and this is what the problem is. But I rarely hear about, well, this is what we're going to do, this is how we're going to do it, and so forth and so on. So family, this is what I'm going to do. I'm going to play this little brief clip for you in terms of what Baba is suggesting or asking. And if you would like to get it, to share it with others, some of you are doing certain kinds of social media things. A quick blast. You could be surprised as to what kind of vibration can be centered or altered by doing certain things. We know that. The system knows that, by the way, which is why they're putting out all different kinds of frequencies. But let me just cue this up real quick and share it with you. And again, if you would like it, Baba can give you his email and website address. And then also you can, of course, email us, and we'll be more than happy to send you the link as well. Very brief, very, very, quick, but also very clear. So check this out.
We are Black people. Say it loud. New African and proud.
There it is. Real quick, real easy.
Yeah.
There it is. But again, in dealing with the psychological effect When you do it, and you do it on a few occasions, and when others are doing it, it can in fact create an impact and some other things. So again, about please give folks your website information, and there's a whole lot of information on that website, family. So by all means, go check it out. Again, Baba has books that he has written as well as books that he has available. So, Baba, please share the website information and any other contact information that you might want folks to know.
All right. And I might add, too, that this initiative is not just for weeks or months. This initiative, as I have explained to people who are involved, this initiative will be going on for years, until we get the message out and make sure it is imprinted into or embedded into our psyche. So it's not just a do it one time and let it drop thing. It's an ongoing process, So my website is asetbooks.com. That's ASETBOOKS. .com. And I'm going to put some more information up there about the New African and Tribe campaign in the coming days. But
okay.
People can hit me at my email, ASET@ASETBOOKS.com.
All right.
That's about it.
Okay, Baba. Great, great. Well, again, family, we suggest and hope that you will support this campaign. Again, it's very easy to share. And before you leave us, Baba, can you kind of give some insight into why the K is used for Africa instead of the C in this particular campaign and also and what it is that is being built.
The K is common in African cultures, and that's the only reason it's used here instead of the C. With writings with the Republic of New Africa, particularly the brother Imari Obadeli, the three Ks are used to emphasize the two-clan nature of the United States of America. But the K in New Africa is just cultural in context. The K is much more, popular or culturally significant for us at this point than the C is. That's essentially
okay.
It.
And another thing that I'd like to add is that when we do our summit, Reparatory Justice Summit that's coming up September 1 through the 4th, we will be also doing what we call pre-plebiscite sessions. And this is to get us ready for, and this is way down the line, an actual plebiscite convention. But for right now, we're going to do kind of introductory sessions, get folks acclimated to the idea, what it is, and so forth. And this is exactly one of the things that we're going to be talking about. What do we want to be called? We've never, as a collective, as a whole, of course, as Baba mentioned, there are various groups who have made that decision. But the masses of our people have not really been introduced to that concept. And so when Baba mentioned President Imari Obadeli, of course, I knew him here in Philadelphia because this is where he was born, but also where he went to school at. And I remember very clearly in becoming the President of the Republic of New Africa that one of the things that he and Baba Herman Ferguson and a few others, made clear to us as youth, as students, that a plebiscite was, in fact, important. And so, we picked that up. We have continued to strive for that. And so, we're going to be doing that in September to introduce our people to that concept. So before you go, Baba, share a little bit about, in terms of the Republic of New Africa, yourself, share a little bit about the idea of the plebiscite.
Well, a plebiscite is a plebiscite gives people the opportunity to determine if they want something or if they do not want it. For instance, the plebiscite that's most important, in my opinion, as far as Republican bureaucracy is concerned, is the plebiscite that would ask, do you want to be a citizen of the United States, or do you not want to be a citizen of the United States? Or put another way, do you want to be recognized as a citizen of the Republic of New Africa, or do you not want to be recognized as a citizen of the Republic of New Africa? That, in essence, is what the major plebiscite is as far as the RNA is concerned. And we have to prepare people for that plebiscite. It's one of the things that I am really concerned about is whether we as a people are ready to answer that question, because we can't have the plebiscite if the people don't understand what the RNA is or what a new African year, if they don't understand things about the Black Liberation Movement. There are, I guess, the mass majority of Black people in this country don't even know what the RNA is. They don't know what a new African is. So if you ask them at this point, would they prefer to be a new African or not, or would they prefer to be part of the Republic of New Africa or not, then there's a good chance, because they are ignorant, that they will not give the response that we hope they will give. So there has to be a lot of educating us in our history, in what the RNA and what nationalism, Black nationalism, is all about, before we can carry out that plebiscite and get a response that is, I guess, an informed response. I think an informed response is more important than the response that I would want. An informed response might give us the response that I want, but it might not. But it's important that the people be informed enough to say yes or no.
That's right.
Based on the information that they have.
Mm-hmm.
So that is, I guess, in a nutshell, what a plebiscite is and what it is for us coming up, at least the major issue. And I think it's important that people have a say-so and that people understand that when you say
yes,
you're new African, that doesn't necessarily mean that you are a citizen of the Republic of New Africa, because
mm-hmm.
we were new Africans before the Republic of New Africa was given a name in 1968, I think it was. So,
mm-hmm.
because there are some people out there, I mean, a lot of civil rights, there are going to be a lot of Black people who are going to prefer to be African Americans rather than take on their new African identity. They have the right to reject their new African identity.
Yes.
But it's the ones who, and I know a lot of these people, because I know people who are not the least bit political, but I listen to their conversation, particularly recently, and
mm-hmm.
they are saying things very similar to what people who are so-called conscious are saying. But they are saying these things without the direction and without the information they need. They're saying these things just based on instinct. And we need to get the word out there to them so that they know that something exists that represents, something already exists that represents what they are looking for. So,
all right. All right, Paola, listen, thank you for elaborating on that. And again, family, if you want more information, you can either contact us at nationalmwm@aol.com, or you can go to Baba Emba's website. All right, Baba, again, thank you so very much. And we're certainly going to be sending it out to the folks that would like to have it on our end.
All right, and again, thanks for having me on.
It's always a pleasure.
Yeah.
All right.
Okay. All right, so good night to you and your listeners.
All right, Baba, thank you. Asante Sana.
Yeah.
All right, family, again, you can support this campaign. Again, if you like the clip, we will certainly be happy to send it to you. You can just email us at nationalmwm@aol.com, and we will certainly get it out to you. Okay, I've just been informed that Chairman Yasukeli is in queue. We were waiting, and it looks like he is there now. So we're going to take just a quick break, and when we come back, we're going to get a live, direct report on, of course, what some of you have heard about this past week or so, and that is, again, with a very clear example of what many of us are very clear about in terms of the kinds of things that have happened and obviously is still happening. And I dare say, we better get ready, because for the future, we can only imagine what we know is going to be going down, particularly as we see the lack of real organization in our communities all through the U.S. This is Black August, and with that said, we are talking about some of the things that Black August represents. And so tonight, again, we're going to get ready to get a report from the Uhuru Movement and Chairman Yasukeli. We'll be right back. And we're Black. All right, family. So again, this is Black August. For those who missed our opening with Mumia Abdul-Jamal, we're going to play that clip again. I think we had a technical difficulty in opening up. And so before we close out, we're going to play Mumia's commentary again. Okay? All right. I want to also remind you that coming up here in Philadelphia on August the 21st, there's going to be a healing fest and fundraiser. Mama Charlotte O'Neill from Tanzania will be coming here to Philly. And so next week, we're going to give you a real special report on that. And, you know, we're going to give you some updates with some of the other things that have been added to that presentation that's going to be taking place here in Philly at the One Art Center. All right, moving right along. Wow. Again, we're sure that many of you have heard about something that took place this past week. It's been over on the news quite a bit, but you know, like what we like to do, family, we like to bring it to you live and in living color directly from the source. And so joining us now is Chairman O'Malley Yasukeli. And, of course, we're talking about the African People Socialist Movement, also known as the Uhuru Movement. And for those who don't know what Uhuru means, it means freedom. And that's definitely what it's about. Real justice, real freedom, real liberation. Let's go to our live line now. And joining us now is Chairman Yasukeli.
Greetings to you, Baba. How are you this evening?
Hello, my dear sister. I'm quite well. Can you hear me clearly?
Yes, we hear you quite well. Thank you.
Wow.
Thank
you.
It's so good to have you with us and certainly to share the information and the energy that, you know, that we're getting ready to provide not only to our listeners and supporters, but, you know, for those who, as Brother Malcolm would say, are enemies too. We're sure that they're tuning in as well.
Surely they are. Surely they are. Yeah.
So before we begin, let's talk a little bit about, of course, the about you and certainly, you know, what envisioned, what inspired you to formulate the African People's Socialist Party?
Well, the thing is the oppression of our people, and I'll be 81 years old in October, and all of my life, I've experienced this oppression. It's been going on now for 600 years, at least since the beginning of the Atlantic slave trade in Portugal.
Mm-hmm.
First attacked Africa and started kidnapping black people and created a whole new world economy as a consequence of that. So early on, I grew up having to recognize that. Every book I read, every thing I saw about black people showed our people, Africans, living under the worst kinds of circumstances, imposed ignorance, imposed violence, affecting our lives, foreign and aliens in charge of us wherever we lived in the world, on the one hand. On the other hand, I would see that white people, the colonizers, they lived well. And so I had to answer the question of why that was the case. And, of course, what has always been explained to us back then, even up to now, is that essentially the reason that we do so poorly as compared to white people is that white people are more civilized, they are thriftier, they save their money, unlike our Africans who simply waste our resources and don't have the level of civilization that white people do. And, of course, that's a burden for every living human being in the world to live under those assumptions. And so that was I was never satisfied with that. And so most of my life, it became necessary for me to get to a truth, a better truth, a real truth, the reality of our relationship. And so that began for me many years ago. And that I've been working with that reality, working with the information analysis and theory that have come from investigating the actual conditions of our existence, how it got to be this way, what is the real deal in the world. And since that time, of course, I've been totally dissatisfied with simply knowing that we're oppressed, that we have to do something, we have to end it, change it, because I've come to conclude that as human beings who created this situation for us, imposed this situation on us, and as human beings, we can overturn it. And so that's what my life has been dedicated to.
Ashe. So before you tell us a little bit about some of the programs that, of course, the movement provides, you know, for our people, just like to know, I always like to ask our family, who are some of the people that inspired you? You know, because we would be remiss if we did not let folks know that some of the hard work and sacrifices that some of our people certainly have exemplified, you know, we have to remember who some of them are. So who are some of the people, some of the pioneers that inspired you?
I think probably the one who was most inspirational for me was Marcus Garvey. As difficult as it was to find out anything about Marcus Garvey, and in fact, it was in the process of trying to tackle these contradictions that I'm confronted with that I ran into Garvey and somebody in explaining how they were going to treat me in the course of my facing certain kind of punishments. There was nothing wrong with you. You're just a Garveyite. And I had to discover who the hell Garvey was. What is a Garveyite? And but Marcus Garvey, I would say. And in terms of actual struggle, it would be Garvey. Obviously, the real fundamental for a person of a particular era, the era that we have to struggle with now with Malcolm X. He had a profound influence on me. And then there are certain people who I came to know, as an organizer, Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee, Ella Baker, Sister Ella Baker, profoundly influential. And while I did not know her directly, I knew her daughters, Fannie Lou Hamer, I would, you know, consider one of those influences that affected me. And then, of course, I learned about other people around the world who were engaged in tackling these contradictions that's imposed on us by a foreign and alien white power that we know as colonialism. Mm-hmm. So, but those are some of the formidable forces that really affected me. And but, you know, I mean, that was those are people of action. These are human beings of action. But just in terms of another influence early on was like Richard Wright. You know, because I could read, you know, forever, and reading Richard Wright was at a particular time in my own development was a real, really important kind of thing, because Wright had an understanding of the African psychology, especially the African male psychology, and the kinds of things that we have gone through and what have you. And I'm saying this not undermining understating the significance of the role of African women. That's not what I'm saying, but I'm saying that Wright understood something about African men and how this colonial domination affected us and even affected our relationship with African women. So those were some of the forces, some of the things that really influenced me and played an important role in helping to shape my consciousness and what it was that I understood we had to do.
Okay, I say, good thanks. That's what we're talking about, family. And, of course, some of these names we're certain that most of you are familiar with. And if you're not, we'll make certain that you start looking it up. Nowadays, it's so easy to get information. So make sure you, you know, check out some of the names if you're not familiar with some of those that were mentioned. So with that said, with the Honorable Marcus Garvey, and of course his Earth Day is coming up this week on the 17th, and of course the UNIAACL will be having their annual session, I believe this year it'll be in Detroit, so that's coming up this week. But with that said, Chairman, you, of course, the organization, the movement, has a variety of programs or services that you provide for our people. And again, you know, I can see the influence of the Honorable Marcus Garvey, because that is something that he most certainly did. So what are some of the things that some of the services, I saw one of your interviews, and of course you mentioned a few of those things, and I think it's important that our people know that we have to do this work in our communities. So please share with us some of the activities and services that the organization provides.
Thank you so much. I think that's what you've just mentioned is fundamental. And the thing that Garvey helped us to understand, that politics is nothing but concentrated economics, and that the people, we have to be able to feed, clothe, and house ourselves. And if we can't do that, then we will always be servants and slaves of somebody else. And that the system that we live under is parasitic. And what makes it function is the ongoing process of stealing our labor, our resources, our material and human resources. And the work that we do has to be work that will negate the influence of the colonizer in our lives. And so, for example, right now we have like a furniture store in Philadelphia where you are. We have a furniture store in Oakland, California. We have the marketplace, the market there, the One Africa, One Nation marketplace in Philadelphia, what used to be called Clark Park, and we refer to as the Hood Park, where African, more than 100 African vendors are able to contribute to feeding their families, and thousands of African people come through on a regular basis, so that we have money circulating in our own community to some extent. It's a cultural force there. We do all kinds of important events at this. And so we have that. We have also In St. Louis, we've initiated One Africa, One Nation Farmers Market. Again, this is a community that's extraordinarily economically depressed when you look at northern St. Louis. And no money circulates in the community. I mean, they talk about food deserts, but we don't suffer food deserts. We actually suffer power deserts. We don't have power over our own lives. And so we are struggling to deal with that. So we created this One Africa, One Nation Farmers Market. So, again, African people come out, and our motto is buy from each other and sell to everybody. And so resources, again, can circulate inside the community. People can come and get the thrill of self-reliance, of beginning to emerge there. We've transformed much of northern St. Louis, the whole area, part of what we're in the process of doing. In fact, this morning at 5 o'clock on July 29th, that my house was raided. My wife and I were sitting at the dining room table talking about how the day was going to be moving. And on that day, she was going to be presiding over a process where we are training 20 African doulas, young women mm-hmm. who would be mm-hmm. doulas in a city like St. Louis, where every year enough black babies die in the first year of life to fill 15 kindergarten classes. That's every year in St. Louis. So we're making it possible, contributing to the ability of African women to have better birthing experiences and African babies being born into a loving kind of situation. So that's one of the things we've done. We took a place down the street from where the Uhuru House is located on West Florissant, and where we see the children playing basketball in the streets and whatever, with these makeshift hoops and stuff. Like, we see it in every community. You know what I'm talking about.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
So what we said, we took a property and demolished a couple of properties on a lot there, and we put a first-rate basketball court there. You should see it. I mean, it's an extraordinary basketball court in the middle of that community. It's got murals up that salute African culture and who we are, and just uplift the community in that fashion. We've taken all kinds of properties, even where the Uhuru House is. We have a 9,000 square foot building that had been abandoned for 30 years, and we bought that building. It had no back wall. It had no floors. And so you see the basement when you walk into the place. We've transformed that, and we've renovated it and made it a first-rate, first-class institution where African people with very minimal charges, people can have their birthday celebrations and their weddings and all other kinds of things. It's a Quabba Hall, you know, for the tree words for welcome. It's a welcome hall at the Uhuru House there in St. Louis. And like I said, we purchased that. There's a huge building that we purchased on Goodfellow and Natural Ridge that used to be a boathouse. This is a massive building.
Mm-hmm.
And we
mm-hmm.
have just finished demolishing the inside there. We're building Uhuru Bakery Cafe. And this is going to serve as an eating place for African people, first-class African people on the one hand. On the other hand,
mm-hmm.
it's going to also function as an African international workforce program. So African men and women coming out of prison, they can be employed there. They can learn how to learn culinary skills and how to run businesses. Then we bought a building next to the basketball court that I just mentioned.
Mm-hmm.
It's a fourplex. And we named it for each of the apartments for African political prisoners. And this is the place where when these African men and women are out of prison, they need a place to stay while they're participating in the workforce program. They can stay. They can live there. So these are just some of the things that we are doing. We have an Uhuru House in Oakland, California, Uhuru House in St. Petersburg, Florida, where we've opened a first-rate commercial kitchen. So African people who caterers or want to, sometimes these are men and women who have trucks, restaurants and food, food trucks and things. This is a place that they can work at in their own community. So these are just some of the things that we've been involved in and are involved in. We've initiated what we call a Black Power Blueprint. It's a really intensive kind of economic development project, particularly headquartered in St. Louis, where we're opening up an entire block of areas for African business persons, where we're going to be using shipping containers to establish businesses there for full, where African men and women can establish businesses there. We have a culture center. We've already bought the land. We have the property. Wakalia, which is something Freedom to Nourish. It's a women's center. It's for women health programs and things like that. So that's part of what it is that we've been doing. That's part of the reason that we come under attack by the United States government.
And that takes us right to really what we want to get into as well, and that is, you know, what have this government said as to the reasons why they imposed this attack?
What they are claiming is that we are hired by the Russians, and that the what we do is because the Russians somehow are our influence. And they said that we ran elections in 2017 and 19 that demanded reparations to black people, that was against gentrification, make the South Side black again in St. Petersburg, Florida. Unity through reparations was the campaign slogan for one. So they're saying that somehow the Russians are using us to run elections and do other kinds of, which is just absolutely ridiculous. I mean, we were doing reparations work, and I ran for office in 1972, you know, so we've used these to project programs for the people and to win the people to a closer understanding of the actual basis for the problems that we suffer from, and to raise the contradictions so that the people can get a grip on them, and particularly because so many African people don't belong to any kind of revolutionary organization. But in fact, the Democratic Party, the base of the Democratic Party, 25% of that is African people. So that's the organization that most of our people are involved in. So how to win people away from that into their own political interests, and so we've engaged in these kinds of things. And so, you know, we're celebrating in May the 50th anniversary of the African People's Socialist Party, and you can go back, and I call on your listeners to go to atspuhuru.org, and you can see the whole history going back 50 years. We are the ones who fought when Dessa Woods had to kill this white man who tried to rape her in Georgia. We are the ones who built the Free Dessa Woods campaign and defended her after they had imprisoned her in Georgia. Now, we're the ones when the government killed Huey P. Newton in Oakland, California, and they tried to use his murder as the basis of making a fierce political and ideological assault on the entire African liberation movement. We're the ones who organized in the streets of Oakland and said that by the time Huey P. Newton's funeral happened, we will have taken the leadership in defining who the Black Panther Party was and who Huey P. Newton would take that from the government. We took that on and won that in a very serious kind of way. We're the ones who supported his widow and raised money and got it to his widow after he was killed. We're the ones who had an honor guard, put the honor guard at the place where his body was being viewed. And the funeral that happened outside the church after Huey was killed, we're the ones who organized that massive people's funeral where thousands of African people came out. So the African People's Socialist Party has always been fighting. We were created with the stated declaration of completing the Black Revolution of the 1960s, and we've also said it's not what we say, it's what we do. And so it's not even a matter of anybody. And this is a horrible insult to say that black people don't have enough sense to know that we are being oppressed. We can't struggle in our own interest. Some outside force has to be the one to do that. That's what they did to every instance. They did it to Paul Robeson, the Russians. Mm-hmm. They took his passport. They created all kinds of things against him. And in the 1960s, they said it was the Chinese who were responsible for what it was that we were doing. But remember, in 1969, the FBI declared that the Black Panther Party was the greatest threat to the internal security of the United States. They didn't say it was the Russians. They didn't say it was the Cubans, it was Black Panther Party, it was black people. The struggle of black people for our own freedom is what they see as an existential crisis, problem for them. And that's why the African People's Socialist Party came under assault, because they see in the African People's Socialist Party the rebirth of a revolutionary movement and the reemergence of the vanguard that they thought they were destroying with the military attack on our movement in the 1960s.
All right. Chairman, do you mind if we have some of our listeners call in and ask some questions
comments? That's fine.
Okay, great.
Yeah,
all right, family,
fine.
Well, listen, we're going to give you all the opportunity to ask some questions. If you want to do so, you need to press 1 so that I can see that you do have an interest in doing so, and we'll certainly bring you into the conversation. Before we do, I just want to kind of go back for one moment, and I just find it so interesting that this government has the audacity, I mean, well, needless to say, any entity that go and kidnap people and bring them thousands of miles away and then enforces enslavement upon them, of course they would have audacity to do this. Certainly in this day and age, I think we need to be very cognizant of the fact that we're seeing a resurgence of a certain type of behavior, and it's not anything new, needless to say, but it did kind of like, you know, get coated, gloated over or covered over during the Obama administration. But I think now folks are seeing that it's alive and kicking, and so we just saw that example on July 29th. And that's just one of few examples. Needless to say, there has been a couple of murders lately. One, of course, in Atlanta, a black woman is said to have been brutally treated and then ultimately is dead as a result of being in the custody of police. So, you know, it is what it is. So, listen, let's go to our live line. Chairman, you were going to comment on that?
And what I was going to say is I think it's really important that the whole notion that somehow the African People's Socialist Party is responsible for tainting the pristine electoral process in the United States. I mean, it's black people who died in churches bombed, babies murdered, leaders assassinated just for trying to get the right to vote, and something the United States government wouldn't protect us to make it possible to do. And then just on January 6th, you had mobs of white people who, like spider people, climbing the walls at the Capitol, running through the Capitol, threatening to hang the vice president of the United States, chasing congresspersons under the desk and out of the building. And right now, every congressperson receives an extra $10,000 for protection because they're scared of white people who don't like the way elections are happening in this country right now. There are more than 400 pieces of legislation that is circulating through the states of the United States, all of, with the intent to undermine the participation of black people in the electoral process. And 18 states have already successfully done that. And they're going to say black people who died in this country just for the right to join the Democratic Party, we are responsible for somehow damaging the reputation of the United States and its pristine electoral process. It's the most asinine charge that can be made, and it makes it very difficult to even speak to the garbage that they're talking about, and it's problematic even to have certain discussions about it because they stole computers, they stole cell phones, they stole texts that went to people everywhere. They stole video recordings, all kinds of stuff. They got all that stuff from our phones and computers, et cetera, and they will construct what they want to construct. This was a political attack that used the arm of the law. FBI agents, tanks in front of my house, threatened me and my wife, you know, come out, you know, with your hands up and this kind of stuff. They attacked my home. They attacked my offices here, St. Petersburg, Florida. You know, as they hear, I mean, in St. Louis and St. Petersburg, Florida as well. And they said they're doing this because they were serving a search warrant. It's flashbang grenades going off all over the place, 5 o'clock in the morning. You know, and actually penetrate the back of my house, plaster all over everything because from these grenades. And they claim that they are serving a search warrant. I didn't see a single flashbang grenade go off at Trump Tower. or wherever else Trump is living, or wherever these mobs of white people who actually attacked the Capitol. They got videos and pictures of them disrupting the electoral process, and somehow black people, you know, who were murdered in this country just for trying to register to vote, and I helped to register them to vote in the South at risk of life, and somehow we have to be taught by the Russians to engage in electoral politics, and so in doing so, we're undermining this pristine electoral process. I just think that we have to really recognize what it is that we are looking at, and it's impossible to take seriously this notion, this allegation that somehow some Russians had to get us involved to say what is happening to us as black people. But it gives them the ability to say when we make a criticism of the treatment of black people, it gives the government the ability to attack my house at 5 o'clock in the morning using tanks, using laser dots on my chest when I'm coming out the door with the threat to kill me like they did Fred Hampton. They say they can now say, it's not niggers that we're doing this to. It's not black people. It's not the former slaves that we're attacking. It's the Russians, which is extraordinary. Go ahead, sister. We can talk.
Yes. And so, you know, again, you triggered some thoughts because this past week we also observed another pre-dawn massacre. And here in Philadelphia, of course, it was the MOVE organization in 1978,
yeah.
August 8th.
Yeah.
And so, you know, they have a history of that kind of behavior and activity. Also recently, it was reported and discovered that the remains of two of the children and again, they do this pre-dawn stuff is a part of their format. Where they attack our people, you know, 4 or 5 o'clock in the morning, that's the way they do it. And so it's a part of terror that we have seen, you know, over and over and over again. And some of it doesn't change. The formula or the format remains the same. So just recently, again, you know, they finally returned some of the remains of the two children. And by the way, I don't know if you know, Sharon, but they had those remains on display, and not just on display, but was using them for the students to research, et cetera, et cetera. So clearly.
It was the MOVE murders. It was the MOVE massacre that brought us to Philadelphia. I mean, there's that furniture store, that market that we have in Philadelphia is a consequence of when they bombed MOVE. And the objective was to terrorize black people and say, this is what will happen to you. This was an exemplary attack. And so then we put out a slogan saying reinforcements are on the way. We put out a newspaper. We had the first African Liberation Day mobilization in Philadelphia. It came as a consequence of what we organized in support of MOVE and the black community in Philadelphia, because that was designed to terrorize not just black people in Philadelphia, but around the country. And the assumption was that if you make a move that displeases us, this can happen to you as well. And so we had to do something. We couldn't just allow that to happen without some kind of response, because to allow them to terrorize black people into immobility was just something that was totally unacceptable. So that's what took us there. That's why there's the furniture store there. That's why the market there that we put there in Philadelphia, because that murder that they committed, that's why we were, you know, Birdie Africa, and I think Birdie Africa was one of the children, I think,
that's the only surviving child.
So we're quite familiar with that, and that's why that's one of the reasons we went into Philadelphia, why we have in Philadelphia right now. So this history is bloody, it's vicious. There is nothing that they will not do in order to keep African people under their boot. And the point is that at some juncture it's absolutely necessary for African people to take a stand and say that we will not be terrorized into silence, that we will not be terrorized into immobility, that there's nothing more precious. As Ho Chi Minh has said, there's nothing more precious than freedom and independence, and we want ours.
Right. I think what has happened is something they did not expect, and that is with this happening, of course, to the Uhuru movement, it has created a form of solidarity amongst various other black groups, organizations, and so forth. The call for
solidarity
is very clear out there. And, you know, amongst people that you might not have heard it from before. So it may have triggered something that they did not anticipate. But anyway, let's take a moment. Callers, family, again, if you have a question, comment, et cetera, that you'd like to bring into the conversation, please press 1 now. And we will certainly love to engage with you. We're going to go to caller at, hold on, 6057. 6057, your mic is now open. Welcome to the segment, A New Day.
Revolutionary greetings, Empress Chi. Thank you for allowing me to participate in the program. Today's program.
I'm recognizing the name. This is my brother from AAPRP up in New York.
Correct, but I'm with GC. Same party that Brother Lee and Brother Bamboshi, who are going to appear later on.
Yes, thank you, brother.
Of that faction. How are you?
Wonderful. So thank you for joining us.
And I want to commend APSP for their efforts to politically educate our people.
Yes.
As we say in my party, the AAPRPGC, we need to organize as never before. And one of the lessons that should be learned is that fighting our enemies is not something that can be done by ourselves.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
It takes permanent organization to do that.
Absolutely. Chairman, you want to respond to the brother? And brother,
yeah,
please,
I think that's absolutely correct. I mean, the AAPRP and every iteration of it that I'm familiar with, I mean, Kwame was a dear friend of mine and other members of the AAPRP. And we cut our teeth on the same cloth. We have the background with SNCC and other kinds of things. I mentioned Ella Baker for a moment ago and So that's an absolute truth. There's no way that debate this, that we have to, first of all, we have to be organized. And in fact,
that's right.
You know, what other tool does the oppressed and impoverished masses have, you know, except organization and some kind of political and ideological clarity? That's the responsibility of revolutionary organizations, to try to contribute to the development of that ideological clarity, strategical direction, and stuff like that, and organization. That's the fundamental thing. So I agree 100%. Yes.
Yes, absolutely. And of course, some of our family from APRPGC just returned back from Colombia. So we can't wait to get that report, my brother.
Right.
Yes.
I'm glad to hear that Bambosa is seen Bambosa, talked to him for many years, but we used to entertain discussions many years ago in Florida about at that time the building a single party through the merger of AAPRP and the APSP and two other organizations at that moment. So the question of unity is really important, and there's a history that's there. So I just wanted to acknowledge that.
Oh, give thanks. And, you know, I'm always thankful for our family with AAPRPGC, because over these past two decades, they have always been supportive of the Million Woman March. And, you know, it's been such a blessing to build. And one of the things that you just said, Chairman, about organizing, that's one of the things that Baba Kwame was noted for saying, and that was to organize. And we took heed to that, which is why we were able to bring 2 million black women together in one location. It never been done before, hasn't been done since, and we are still moving forward. And this year, 5-year anniversary, we're hoping that, you know, the kind of solidarity that people talk about will be shown to us this year as we now move forward the first global movement for women and girls of African descent worldwide. So we're looking forward to building.
Splendid. Splendid.
All right.
Yeah.
All right, my brother, did you have any other comment or question you wanted to share with us?
Yes. Let's see. I think it should be clear to everybody that when we talk about permanent political organization, we're talking about forming our own organizations. Not these, you know, capitalist political parties that we've been supporting for over 100 years since we won the right to vote. And that has always been kind of shaky over the decades and whatnot. But we have to form our own independent political organization.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And my brother, that's one of the things for this coming week, you know, Labor Day weekend, we have an expression that we're putting out to others, as Baba Emba mentioned about the campaign that he has for the new kind of you know, representation. And we're saying to people, there cannot be any more celebration, observance, or whatever about labor until we begin to make advancements with getting reparations, reparatory justice for the free labor, the free brutal labor that our people had to undergo. So this coming so-called Labor Day weekend, that's one of the things that we're going to be discussing, and that is the development of our own independent political parties. And at least to make certain that we, and when I say we, I'm talking about those, as Shirley Chisholm would say, unbought and unbossed, okay, that we at least begin to recruit, to manage the campaigns, to be able to, you know, select the kinds of people that we want to run and back them totally and also hold them accountable. But see, here in Philly, what we had at some point, as with in other parts of the country, there used to be something called the Black United Front. And during that time period, folks literally were able to put black folks in office. And in some cases, it worked. But in some cases, it didn't, because there was little to no accountability. And so these Negroes got in office and became just as much a part of the system and the machinery as anybody else, because the kind of capability to hold them accountable was not there. So we've learned now from that we've got to cover all the bases now to make certain that when we make these moves, we able to keep them in check. Go ahead, brother.
Yeah, because what you mentioned, the Black United Front work that was done in Philadelphia, that's part of the whole process that elected Wilson Good, that dropped the bomb. And the fact is, there was no accountability. There was nothing that held him accountable. He was simply a Democratic Party hack. That's what he was. He had no history of ever being involved and supporting the struggle of our people. He was always a hack for the Democratic Party. And he dropped that bomb and said, yes, I did, and I'd do it again. And so the accountability is important. That's why something like 14 years ago, this November, we'll be having the 14th annual March on the White House that's done by the Black is Back Coalition for Social Justice, Peace, and Reparations. And we built this organization as a part of bringing back the unity subsequent to the military attack on our movement that killed Malcolm, that killed King, that killed 30 members of the Black Panther Party in 1968 alone, that killed the co-founder of the African People's Socialist Party and a whole bunch of other people. Well, that led to, and we don't know how many people were arrested in that process. I mean, some people are still in prison now. And that scattered people, organizations, destroyed many of the organizations, and It was in this time frame that the African People's Socialist Party came together to complete that revolutionary project. So we built this coalition. Right now, there are 18 different organizations a part of this coalition, and they we have adopted a national black political agenda for self-determination that everybody's still accountable to, and that we have for years now, we have been doing electoral schools to teach African people in the community, to teach young people and others, not just young people, but people in the community, how to participate in the electoral process, to how to do recall campaigns, how to put measures on the ballot that might call for reparations to be paid to African people. Of course, you know, all of this does is simply raise the contradictions, take the political questions deeper to masses of the people, and provide a tremendous amount of political education for the people who have been brought into political life who otherwise might not be in political life. So, you know, this National Black Political Agenda for Self-Determination is what we hold everybody accountable to. So you want support from these 18 different organizations and the work that we do in the world, then you got to adopt the National Black Political Agenda that calls for reparations, that calls for the retreat, removal of the police in our communities, black control of the police, talks about the issue of women. The first item on the agenda speaks to the question of women, African women, and then the second, I think, speaks to the question of the African family and how the family has been under assault since the forced enslavement of our people, et cetera. So those are some of the things that we have initiated, and we've been doing this. This is going to be the 14th annual mobilization, March in the White House. We are the first, the Black is Black Coalition, we had the first march on the White House with Obama there. It just smashed this whole notion of some post-racial kind of thing. And there were many so-called black nationalists and communists who wouldn't support this mobilization because they didn't want to march against the Democratic Party or the U.S. government with the black person who was running things with them. So, we have to have this accountability, and it's more, we have to go beyond just having discussions and actually into political life and help to bring the people into political life and organization.
Absolutely. And by the way, brothers and family, for October with the Million Women March 25-year anniversary reunion, we will be holding a Million Black Women Rising Convention and introducing the Million Women Party. Again, as the brother mentioned, we have to have our own independent parties, and ours, of course, is for self-reliance, self-determination, and self-defense. We are bringing this forward into 25 cities during the course of the year 2023, but we're kicking it off here in Philly, October, starting on the 21st, and for those who will be supporting and joining, we'll be sending you information soon. But remember also on the 29th, we'll be holding the first African Black Women's Historical and Heritage Parade here in Philadelphia, October 29th. And it's also International African Women's Solidarity Day. So we'll be telling you more about that next week. We're getting things ready and lined up. And so, brothers, please, and you know, make sure the sisters in your organizations are aware of it, because we certainly would love to have them participate. And brothers, too, by the way. Brothers always help us in all kinds of ways, but we're making certain that the sisters are going to be front and center come October and also in the future as we raise up the mother of civilization. All right. Uh-huh. We got another caller coming in. Thank you, my brother, for your question or comment. Was there anything else before we close out with you?
No, nothing else. I'll hold my comments into the next segment of your program.
All right. Good, thanks. Okay, I'm going to keep your mic open then. So if you'd like to chime in, you can just mute yourself for now. But if you'd like to chime in before we close out, then you can feel free to do so, okay?
Okay, thank you.
All right, thank you. All right, we're going to go now to caller 9498. 9498, welcome to the segment of New Day, and your mic is open.
Triple A.
Hey, Brother Ray. Yes, I got you. How's my brother?
Oh, okay, yeah. I just got this new used phone, so I'm just really trying to learn how to use, you heard me say it refurbished.
Yes.
It's not new.
Yes, yes.
So good to hear from you, Philadelphia. You're on the move as always. The lecture is on from Dr. Lewis that we put on YouTube. Brother Mike is going to be the next speaker. And I'm listening to the accomplishments of the speaker, the property that they are moving forward with. And then he got into the state-sponsored terrorism historical on African people. And bougie Negroes getting put in these position in politics. Boulets. And we have the same thing going on in New York City with these weaponized Negroes. And they just, and then they got the nerve to say it's a black political power in New York City, knowing that the majority, most all of the black elected officials have to kiss the ring of the Jew man, the Jewish controllers that control them. But my question is, all the historical facts that he has brought down that they just crushed on the Black Power movement and a lot of our members still rotting in upstate prisons around this country. And then you look at the treatment of the Don, you know, raiding his house and everything. And they had a cliche when I was coming up that it's only two things that the white man has given up, and that's so-and-so and bubblegum. And they were fresh out of bubblegum. And they can't take care of their own. Do you really think deep down, with the historical controlling of African people since they brought us here, deep down inside, do you really think they've given up some reparations with all the stuff they have did to control us economically? Do you really, and they are having a hard time themselves. It's getting so bad for them, they're getting their own people strung out on crystal meth, oxycodone, and fentanyl. Do you really think they're giving us anything? Thank you.
Chairman, you want to respond to that?
Yeah, I do want to respond to that. The fact of the matter is they've given us nothing, ever. They've never given us anything. Except hell, anything that we have that might be considered progress, we took it. It's been bloodshed and struggle of African people. So no, that's not going to happen. But I really want us to understand something about the nature of this social system that we are, because that's what we're talking about. I know the white man is everything that everybody has declared him to be. But it's created a social system that's parasitic in its very nature. They like to refer to capitalism, but you have a social system that came into existence through colonial slavery. And especially when you look at the transatlantic slave trade in Portugal 600 years ago, attacked Africa and initiated this process of selling black people around the world. And then, in fact, this was the whole process that created the European, created the white man, if you will, as a political entity, and created a whole new world economy. There was no world economy before then. People may have traded some with each other, but one economy that linked the whole world together came into existence through this process that people refer to as capitalism. We refer to it as the colonial mode of production that's defined essentially by the parasitic relationship that white power, white people, Europe has attached to Africans and other peoples, people in the Americas and various other places around the world. And what we see happening is that the parasite is in trouble. And the thing about a parasite, it has to have a host. to live on. It sucks the blood and resources of the people. That's why we live in a world where you got something like 80% of the human beings on the planet Earth are trying to survive off $10 or less a day. 50% of the human beings on the planet Earth, many of us living in the richest parts of the world in terms of natural and human resources, 50% are trying to survive off $2.50 a day. And if you're Africa, you're lucky if you work all day for just a meal. This is the social system. It's parasitic. It's parasitic globally. It's parasitic in the city that you live in. That's why you can go one place and see wealth and abundance, and then you go to our communities and you see poverty and impoverishment. And that's because where there's wealth and abundance, it's because they stole it from us. They took it from us. But the world is rejecting this. That's why there's unending war. That's why they have to be in places like Afghanistan where they just got beaten. That's why they have to be attacking people in Venezuela and Nicaragua and all over the rest of the world, because people are fighting to take their resources back. And this is creating severe crisis. That's why part of what you see is that there's a spike in the death rate of white people. In fact, the spike among death of white people is highest as ever been. They have never recorded this kind of death, white people, suicide, alcoholism, drugs. That was just mentioned. This is stuff white people are killing white people, and this is because partially is their view of themselves has been challenged by the relationships that people are challenging in terms of the material resources. You got to go to get your own job, play your own damn basketball, have your own babies, do your own stuff, because people around the world are rejecting this relationship. So this is what creates crisis. This is why the white people, sectors of the white population attacking the Capitol. This is the bait between white people. I mean, you got to remember that this Capitol was not attacked by the Black Panther Party. It was not attacked by the Russians. This was normal white people, ordinary white people attacked the Capitol, climbing the walls of the Capitol, because there's a deep and profound crisis. It's not just limited to the United States. You see it happening all over Europe. And that's because they cannot hold on to the resources and the people that they've done in the past. Now you got Russia and China into this equation, challenging the status quo as it exists. And this deepens the crisis for them. So what are they going to do about Russia? What are they going to do about China? China is the fastest growing economy in Africa right now. They've controlled Africa themselves. The white man has controlled Africa themselves for the last 600 years. And now they've got these intruders who are taking these resources that used to be able to guarantee was going to come to them, fill their refrigerators, fill their supermarkets, et cetera. So this is part of what's leading to this crisis that we're seeing, and the behavior of the United States government on every level, international and locally, right here in St. Louis, elsewhere. So what we're seeing is a social system in deep trouble. It's in a state of crisis. It's a weakening state, and we are building. Certainly we are in the African People's Socialist Party. All these institutions that I'm talking about, we got more than 50 independent economic institutions that we created in the United States. We're located and doing actual work throughout Africa. South Africa, one of the strongest presidents, Sierra Leone, Ghana, Nigeria, Mali, Ivory Coast. We're there. We are in the Caribbean doing work, organizing black people, and we're here in the United States. We are building, and they're in a state of decay, and that's why they have to be attacking us and all the other peoples around the world who are struggling to end this relationship with the colonial parasite.
I hear you.
No doubt about it. Well, it's needless to say, it's been a ongoing battle. As we talked about when we started out earlier, we talked about the Honorable Marcus Garvey, and certainly from that time on, and even prior to that, because, of course, this month we're going to be looking at the Haitian Revolution and other so August is filled with that spirit of resistance, and certainly we have many who have shown us that. But the one thing that I think is very important that we look at and begin to analyze, and that is, again, and I have to say this, family, because I am a black woman, I think it's so important that we bring our sisters forward in this movement, in the struggle for the liberation of our people. And again, in such a way that it definitely represents as it had with others. We talk about Ya Santawa. We talk about Nzinga. We talk about our sister Sada, by the way. We talk about many of our great black women, but today, particularly for these young sisters, who are we able to present to them, you see, in this day and age? And I think we have to examine that very carefully because it's becoming very dangerous, you know, with a lot of the lashes and the, all these other things, which is wonderful in its proper context. But when you're a young black sister, the messages can get misconstrued and misdirected. And so, again, you know, really appealing to our people to be, just be a little more cognizant and proactive. And lastly, before we go back to our brothers and our family that are listening, here in Philadelphia, and my research is indicating that this is happening all over the country, here in Philadelphia in the past 1 week, we had a report of 5 missing black women and girls. Prior to the week prior to that, it was 6. Prior to the week of that, it was 5. So now for 3 weeks, roughly, at least 5 black women and girls have been reported, note the word reported, missing. And yet millions of dollars are being matriculated throughout the city and in other cities for gun violence. And so, again, I'm saying as we talk about the issues, police, and by the way, as I mentioned earlier, there was a murder of a young sister in Atlanta. And I'm raising these issues because there seems to be an imbalance in discussion and in the response to certain things. And so, again, as we have these conversations and dialogue about the system, it's capitalistic chains on our necks. We have to also evaluate what's going on in our communities and the lack of responses to those things, which, by the way, enables the direct, obvious enemy to do what they do so more easily, you see. So again, you know, as we approach this next decade, you know, I'm appealing again and impressing upon our people to take into consideration, as the chairman just mentioned, his organization has a priority for the women. And I'm saying, again, we've got to step it up even more because, lastly, these young girls that are now in our midst that are 12, 13, 14, 15, they're going to be somebody's mommy in the future. So I'm not creating anything of feminism. I'm advocating that of African and black liberation and the future of our people, okay, from a very practical position. These are going to be somebody's mommy in the future. So again, I'm saying that, family, get on plugging in WM25 reunion, because if I don't, it doesn't get done, okay? And so I have to take the opportunity to do that when I can. So, all right, so let's go back to our brothers.
May I, Empress Chi?
Absolutely.
I thank you. I think it's right on what you're talking about. And I want to make sure that we do what we can to support WM25. But I also want to tell you the office that was raided in St. Petersburg, Florida, the work there is led by a 20-some-odd-year African woman. She runs that. She runs the radio station. She runs the newspaper. She runs the book, the publishing company that we have there. She's a organizer in the streets on a regular basis. Her name is Akilia Anai, and she's one of the so-called unindicted co-conspirators that the FBI is trying to get because of her political work. She's active. She's not just somebody, you know, who simply writes something and you can hear them, but she's actually in organizing. And one of the reasons, and that of the 50-some economic institutions that I'm talking about, there's an African woman who is over these. All the economic development work that I'm talking about, an African woman is responsible.
Gotcha.
We created the African National Women's Organization. It's structured. The women I just mentioned are in the Central Committee of our party. the African National Women's Organization is structured in our party. So we got, you will find at minimum 50% of the leadership of the African People's Socialist Party women. And then in addition to having women who are responsible, like, for helping to carry out all the work we do internationally, there's an organization, there's a seat at the Central Committee for the African National Women's Organization that pays special attention to the issues affecting African women. And no, we are not feminists either. But they're just responsible for, in May, Mother's Day March, dealing with CPS, this institution that institutionalized theft of our babies by saying suddenly black women who nurse white babies forever can't take care of our own children, and so they have to be taken from us. This is the state doing this, and this is something the leader of the work that we have, the All African People's Economic and Development Project, APDEP, is led by a woman. And these are women on the Central Committee. These are not just figureheads or something like that. They are the ones. This sister, Aisha Fields, Dr. Aisha Fields, is the woman who organized. We created a committee early on dealing with this whole COVID thing and initiated a process not only inside the United States but in South Africa and other places where African people were taking on this issue, going door-to-door, talking to our people, dealing with the COVID issue and things like that. She's leading the work to create the Black Ark, which is our response to the Red Cross. So that the African women are central and fundamental to everything that we do, and I just wanted to mention that. And when they attacked my house in St. Louis, and they said everybody in the house come out. Then I came out, my wife came out, and when she was coming out the door, she was almost hit in the face by a drone that they sent up the stairs in the house. But this is not just my wife. That's not her significance. She is also a leader in the party over the economic work that I'm talking about. So we believe in a very serious way, concretely, not just by talking about it. In fact, it's her slogan. It's not what we say. It's what we do, you know? So I just want to say that. So, yeah. Thank you,
Chairman. And you know, I really appreciate that. And I'm looking forward to meeting some of the sisters that you mentioned again. One of the things that we realized was because there wasn't a synchronizing of these efforts that our women do all over the country and have done. I mean, when you look at the history of the Black Panther Party, it's a known fact that when it came to the work, you know, and a lot of that, it was the sisters. So, yes, we have a history of our sisters doing, and although in the SNCC, et cetera, the women played major, major roles. And again, even going back to Yampa Marcus Garvey, but the fact and the truth of the matter really is, and I didn't know this until I started talking to some of the elder women who were in the Black Panther Party and other organizations. I didn't realize the real, you know, internal stuff about these things. And then I've come to learn it for myself. And somebody's got a lot of noise going on, so let me mute someone because I'm hearing shuffling. So hold on 1 minute. Hold on. Okay, let's try that. See if that helps it. I think that did it. Okay. So my point is that African women, black women have always, you know, kind of had certain positions and roles that they actually do things in and with. But again, what I learned is in these two decades in examination, for example, as African women, as black women here in the U.S., how are we linked? How are we actually connected on a national level? Because other women are. They showed us that in 2018 when they called themselves doing the Women's March and then tried to really almost take the name of the Million Woman March because there wasn't enough solidarity and synchronization. And so other women wanted to seize the time. They failed, of course, because they didn't realize that we were still very, very active, even though we weren't jumping in front of cameras and stuff, and we weren't getting money from George Soros and other people.
Yeah.
That's what I'm saying is this.
Party. Yeah.
Well, it was, but see, again, I'm saying as African women, as black women, and I say black in the context of a political consciousness, see, for us to be organized on a national level with a similar kind of platform and agenda. That's what we're now striving to do. That is not what's happening. As Brother Ray Ray mentioned earlier, and as you did also, Chairman, see, Philadelphia is a very interesting city because it's the first of many things for them people, including, as it was mentioned earlier, the bootleg. And again, I'm not talking about it from the context of, you know, what some might be referring to it as. I live in Philly. I know how this stuff operates. And so, again, other groups of people have very intricate machineries that they operate from all over the country. And a lot of this includes the women, too, you see. And like you said, Chairman, but under the auspices of who? For the agenda of what? So, again, for African women, for Black diasporic women to be organized on you know, in a connective kind of manner, that's what we're talking about doing now. That's the kind of leadership, for lack of a better word, that we're talking about bringing together so that we can synchronize some of these actions. MWM has what we call the Black Women's Defense and Justice Leagues. So that way, when any of our sisters are in a certain kind of crisis or need a certain kind of support, be it leadership or otherwise, there can be a synchronization that can happen in any city, in any state, at any given time. This is what we're talking about building in terms of a movement for and of women of African descent from all walks of life. So again, this is different from what we've had and seen previously. And I dare say it is not only past due, it is absolutely necessary. We've got to do this. And we're hoping that our brothers will not only see the value of such a thing, but will see the importance of it. Because, again, and I learned this the hard way, how can one see 2 million Black women assemble and not see the potential and the possibilities? But that is what happened. So now we're going to seize the time and move forward accordingly. All right, family, listen, we're going to get ready to close this out. We're going to go back to Chairman Yasitele and get ready to get some closing comments from him. And, again, if you all have a quick comment that you want to bring in, we invite you to do so. And you have to press 1, though, because I can't see. I can't read your mind. You got to press 1 so I get an indication that you want to do that. In the meantime, I want to remind you again that MWM Convention, A Million Black Women Rising, is coming. We invite all of our sisters who are interested to be a part of it. For more information, you can email us at nationalmwm@aol.com. Again, nationalmwm@aol.com. I want to remind you for next week, we're going to get our report on the inauguration that just took Columbia, and we'll also have some updates for you on a activity that's coming up here in Philadelphia with Mama Charlotte O'Neill. Of course, they've been living in Tanzania. Her husband's been in exile for several decades now, but she will be coming and doing some incredible musical kinds of presentations and healing here in Philadelphia at One Art. We're going to give you a special report on that next week for our program for New Day. All right, looks like no one else has any questions or comments, so let's go back to Chairman Yasitele and get some closing comments, and certainly get more information on how we can support. Again, none of us should allow this government to do anything to any of our people that's striving to do something to bring us forward. Regardless of whatever ideologies or other kinds of thought, we should not allow this government to do anything to any of us without there being at least some kind of response that indicates that we are watching, that we are concerned, and that we are willing to do what we need to do in the best interest of our people. So just keep that in mind, and as we now listen to the closing comments of Chairman Yasitele, please make certain, family, that you all step it up. This, again, is Black August, and it needs to be about action. That's what Black August represents, resistance. So let's go back to Chairman Yasitele and get his closing comment, and then we're going to close this session out. Chairman, you got the mic.
Yes. First of all, I want to thank you very much, Empress Chi, and I want to thank your listeners for spending this time. You have provided us an opportunity to break out of the silo that the government attempts to lock us into so that they can control the narrative completely. So this has been important. Also, I would hope that you would give Sister Charlotte my regards. I remember her husband, Pete,
who was
really important, did a lot of important, you know, culture-related resistance-type work as well. And I want to let everybody, listeners, understand that part of the basis of this attack on us, among other things, was to divert all of our resources away from these programs, from the basketball courts, from the doulas, from everything that we're doing, and to make us spend lots of money on lawyers and getting, you know, communications equipment and fixing our doors and windows that have been knocked in and things like that. It's going to be really important for people to provide support. The fact is that this is not, while laws, what they've done is make a political offense against us, and they have the law. They have control of the law. The law is only the opinion of the ruling class. That's what the law is anyway. So they have control of that. So it's really important that people, that you make it known, your support, that I would ask people to go to the Hands Off Uhuru website. That's Hands Off Uhuru, UHURU.org. I think that's really important if you would do that. And also, on September 2nd through the 4th, Friday through Sunday, the International People's Democratic Uhuru Movement, a convention, NPDOM, which is led by an African woman, Kalambai Andanet, will be having its convention. And people should go to INPDUM 2022eventbrite.com. Go there and register and participate in this convention. It's really important because it's going to be dealing with this question. This is the defining issue, this attack on our house, just in our institutions, just in terms of where we are as a movement right now. And finally, on November 5th and 6th, the Black is Black Coalition for Social Justice, Peace, and Reparations will be conducting 14th annual March on the White House. We'll be having a rally, and we'll be having a conference there. So please go to blackisbackcoalition.org. Look for us and register for that. And go to APSP Uhuru, APSPUhuru.org, and get all the information that you can about what it is that we're trying to do, and get in touch with us. We have to make, as I mentioned earlier, demonstrable opposition to what this government has done with this attack, because this is an attack on Black people, on Africa, and what have you. So I want to thank you again, Empress P, for making this opportunity possible to speak to your listeners and to you. And I look forward to hearing you. And I'm interested, very interested in more information on MWM25. Thank you so much.
Oh, absolutely. It's a pleasure, Chairman. We thank you for taking the time to join us, to share with us, and to build with us. One quick sidebar, you mentioned Dr. Aisha Fields. It just so happened that her mother, Dr. Michelle, was one of our coordinators for the original Million Woman March in 1997. And, of course, she studied in Cuba. And I just recently saw her, as a matter of fact. So we're looking for our alumni to be with us this time around for our silver anniversary. And also one other thing I wanted to mention, you mentioned the great Richard Wright. Well, of course, his daughter, Julia Wright, was with us for the original Million Woman March and will be joining us for our African Women's Solidarity Day for October the 29th. So, you see, we have some connections here that synchronize.
Of course we do.
Of
course we do. We're all in the trenches together. Yeah.
All right.
Yes, yes.
All right,
thank
family.
You
so
much.
Listen.
And all right,
thank you,
thank
Chairman.
You.
And also, I want to thank the sister Nwezi. Thank you, Sister Nwezi, for she was so adamant about making this happen, and I really appreciate her, Chairman. So please, I just
Splendid.
Want you to know you got a hard worker there.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I know that. Like you said, the women do it. the
right,
men are the
so.
Jawbone and the women are the backbone.
So, listen,
thank you
so I want
much.
You to know we really
right.
appreciate her. All right, family, listen, we're going to close this session out. We want to remind everyone again, MWM is coming forward with our global movement. For more information, you can email us at nationalmwm@aol.com. Again, nationalmwm@aol.com. You can go to our We Charge Genocide 21 website. Still under construction, but it's enough there for you to get a gist of what's going on. We say that reparations is not only mandatory, it is absolutely the call of the day. We call it reparatory justice in the formula of R, the letter 4, and the letter J. So it's R4J, reparatory justice in four ways: reparations, restitution, restoration. But guess what? We also say retribution. Those are all areas of law. We are representing and moving forward, embracing the work of Queen Mother Moore, Paul Robeson, William Patterson, Dr. Robert Brock, and as a matter of fact, we're going to have his wife joining us for September, and also, of course, Malcolm X. Those are just some of the ones. We connect reparations with human rights violations. So we have 21 areas that we're focusing on. We'll be presenting it to you in September. Again, feel free to contact us at nationalmwm@aol.com, or you can go to wcg21.com, rechargegenocide21.com. You can also email us for our National Black Human Rights Project, and that's nbhrproject@gmail.com. You can make a donation with PayPal there, or you can hit us with a cash app, and that's $HOT1111. Again, $HOT1111. We are independent. We do not get grants, corporate sponsoring, and all that other kind of stuff. So your support is always welcome. Till next time, family, we say Pomoja to the Shinda. Together, we shall win. Peace out. I'm going to go to the hospital.